Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom. I am a believer. When time rushes me to get through my dreams, encouraging me to release the edge of that rope that kept me hanging between heaven and earth, between light and heaviness, between feelings and thoughts. There you are, standing by my side, witnessing how similar we are. When pressure amounts as I get closer to the edge, feeling the closure on old patterns, old beliefs, beliefs that drew me to you, drew me to that part in you that I forgot within me, I'm able to feel the land growing trees in my old footsteps, covering ancient pathways and even older neurons. Thoughts that shaped my perception and thus my appearance. Thoughts that convinced me to fly into the abyss. And as I stand before the cliff, a spot of light appears straight ahead, making me a believer. A believer that all is happening for the good of my jump, for the good of your jump. A believer that I always could flew, but forgot, persuaded by my own insecurities. I'm a believer, a noetic sense of what is here in front of me and ahead of us. I'm grateful, thankful, and a lover. Lover of truth and perception, and appreciation to all that you've created for me, for us, for all that we are. Hareini mekabel al atzmi et mitzvat aseh shel ve'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. I hereby accept on myself the due commandment, the utterance of love your friend, your neighbor, your gardener, your colleague, in the same way that you express love to yourself. Shalom, welcome to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. I am Ilan Azulay, I'm your host, I'm a spiritual mentor, a sound therapist for you who are ready to reclaim your power. And today we have a wonderful guest, a repeating guest again, Julie Bergman. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. What a beautiful reading that was.
Oh, thank God and thank you.
Very beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always 5 minutes before. I try to get to this sometimes before, but then I get into my head and I just let it, and as I come and sit here, so thank you.
Well, don't make excuses for that, because it works.
I guess so.
Oops.
I dropped one of the things that we wanted to talk about. And so, Julie Bergman is here. And hello, everyone. Julie is a producer. She's a writer. She's an activist, first and foremost, I feel.
Maybe. You know, maybe. I think maybe... all the stuff that I try to do comes from a place of being an activist. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like somebody asked me once when I was shooting my documentary, are you a filmmaker or an activist? And another director told me that it is important when you shoot a film, depends on, well, at least where I was, to see it as a filmmaker and not an activist. And I think that they intended for a separation between myself and the characters.
Well, I mean, I understand what that phrase means, and I do think that there are times when it's a valuable observation, because when you're making a documentary in particular, there is a certain level of objectivity that is useful and important.
Mm-hmm.
But what draws you to the subject is probably the activist in you. And it doesn't mean that the activist in you is always inflicting your own opinion on the material. It just means that you're drawn to the subject because it matters to you.
But why are we drawn to certain subjects? Is it possible that we are active? Because look at many people, and myself included, and others, maybe not everyone, but we come to a point of activism many times because of our wounds.
Yes, and not just our personal wounds, but also the wounds we see around us. Mm-hmm. Maybe things that we want to be able to help draw attention to. Mm. And if our medium is film, mm-hmm. then that becomes the tool through which we express that. But it doesn't always mean, when you say that you're an activist, it doesn't always mean that you're inflicting your opinion on someone else. It may just mean that you want to highlight an issue so other people will start to think about it and have their own opinion about it and maybe do something about that opinion if that's what's called for, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because, you know, activists, Julie is a director. She's a writer. She did a bunch of films. But one of the films that I want to point out is the film Harmony that you've done, I guess, quite a while ago.
And yeah, the film was finished about 4 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. And what is beautiful about this film is with Prince Charles, Prince of Wales, right? And you've been in a very close proximity with him.
Yes, like, I have.
Sitting and dinners and all this kind of stuff. And it's interesting that when we get to the people that we want to get, we realize that all the obstacles that were put in front of us getting to that person was really not because of him, but because of the people. It's like you want to get to a king, right? You have to go to prime minister or something. You have to go through a slew of people that are entrusted there to protect his interest or her interest, depends who that is. But it really ties into today's topic. We are in very interesting times. In a couple of days is Yom Kippur, and Yom Kippur is the atonement day in Judaism. And atonement sounds very severe, right?
It sounds ominous, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds very severe.
It does.
Right? It's like atonement, yeah, otherwise you'll be, you know, that kind of thing. But really it starts if I heard somebody saying, and it's really interesting because it's really the truth. What are we starting from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur, right? It's these are the 10 days
of awe.
Exactly. Wonderful. Yeah, of awe. But it's really a reflection time, a reflective time, to reflect what happened between the Yom Kippur of last year until Rosh Hashanah of this year. Like, how were we? Now, if you are here, first of all, I want to give you the phone number if you want to call in and you want to ask any questions. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. But wait.
There's more.
And for blah, blah, blah dollars, you get 323-203-0815. And it's Facebook Live. And if you are watching, you know that. So comments are great. But really looking, this is not, I'm not coming from a religious standpoint. I'm not coming from this is what we should do, this is what you should do, how could you, and that's judgment, and many times those humanoids' judgments are coming from our own fears, looks at our perception about ourselves. And this is really what, if you're here for the first time, this is really what I try to do here. Well, we do here, actually. Try is actually the negative place. Is bring different ways and perceptions to how we can communicate, how we can understand that everything depends on how we communicate, you know. It's understanding in this spiritual work that I do through sound, or that we're even sitting here in the radio. I feel it's first of all the understanding that everything that happens in this realm, everything that happens physically, has a spiritual reason, has a spiritual connection. It's like two polarities, you know, like a battery. You have to have the plus and the minus,
right?
For the battery to function, right? So it is the the physical that is happening has a spiritual reason, has a spiritual tie, a spiritual bond that is connected to our subconscious, that is connected to those places within us that we are not seeing with our physical eyes.
And I think that that's, you know, again, you know, it's not about being religious necessarily, but one of the things I've always appreciated, even from when I was a child, about this week between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, mm-hmm. is that it always felt to me like it was a time that asks of us to look inward.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that so much of our lives are spent dealing with the stuff outside.
Yes.
And sometimes we're able to do it in a conscious way, and many times we're not. Many times we're being pushed and pulled by other people's perceptions and other people's needs and mm-hmm, other people's mm-hmm. demands mm-hmm. and a lot of times our frustration can come from feeling like we're getting lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
And somehow, not unlike Shabbat, you know, where from sundown to sundown you kind of stop all of the things that are cluttering.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like now you get a week where you're being asked to consciously look inward and think about how to be more conscious in the world. And that doesn't have to do with judgment about being better or, but it's not about looking outward, it's about looking inward. And I think it's an incredibly good exercise.
Yeah, it is an exercise throughout the year, so we can really look at those things authentically without judgment, without stories from the outside, without any. And this is what the intention of Yom Kippur, I think this is the better word to describe that. It's a time of purification.
Mm.
It is purification of all that flew through our veins, that went through our veins, that contaminated maybe, you know, as we're talking from the outside, that came from the outside mm-hmm. and contaminates our breath.
It's like sitting and watching the movie of your life for a week.
Well, yeah, I mean, something like that. Yeah, it is definitely a time of reflection, a time of looking inwards, how we are between one another, and to remember that, you know, some people look at themselves as leaders, and some people don't. Okay. But in reality, we are all leaders. I feel that we are all leaders. Now, there is a leader that leads people, spiritual leaders, country leaders. But if we look at our own ring, our own circle, we're all leaders. We're all leaders within our own circle.
Well, it's like the expression, how are you leading your life? I mean, we are leaders of our lives.
Leaders.
We are.
You know, and I want to bring up this this book, and I highly recommend that. I'm kind of almost halfway through, but the halfway through is like, you know, you don't have to open an egg to know that it's good or not, right? It's like that kind of thing. So I'm putting this book here. It's called Awakening the Spark Within, and it is by Rabbi Yitzhak Ginzburg. And I opened it, and the first time I got this book, and it's an older book, it's a book from, I don't know, 2000 something, whatever. I think it's 2001 actually. Yeah. But it's so, this is the thing, when we look at everything spiritually, and we look at the reasons and the spiritual connection, there is no time limit on what we read or what we understand. And this is what I opened it to, the page. The ultimate leader, as part of his leadership role, will be first and foremost a teacher and a judge. By establishing a soul connection with all the people, he will lay a foundation of judgment based on peace and compromise. And, well, I'll continue the next paragraph. As the Messianic era quickly approaches, now this is 2001, quickly approaches, and as the world continues to change at breathtaking taking speed, it becomes increasingly important to pursue the inner spiritual work needed to reveal the truth of Torah and the peace that it is, that it, its essence. And so, and then again, to save a life is to save a world. And it's really, this is really what is needed to grow, is to come to the spiritual understanding of how we've connected with ourselves, if we've connected, and really to go into these places that are compassionate, that are kind. And you know, and many times when we say the word judge, we have a negative connotation to it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Absolutely.
We have a negative connotation to judge because we come from a place of, as humans, we grow up with the stories of our parents that were judging of us, that judged us.
I also think the word leader is interesting because, for instance, this is just my perception of it, but when you talk about someone as a leader, it's someone who has responsibility or has taken on responsibility.
To what? To whom? To whatever.
To whatever it is they're leading, mm-hmm. or whomever it is mm-hmm. they're leading, and whomever is following them.
Mm-hmm.
The minute you acknowledge that you're responsible for something, to something, you're accountable. And I think that is why leadership can be really intimidating to people, because it doesn't necessarily have the connotation that everyone can be a leader, which I actually agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think everyone does have leadership qualities,
mm-hmm.
but we're not raised necessarily to exercise them in a way that doesn't put people down or lead people somewhere that is ego-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really good if leadership could be redefined as something that everyone should figure out how to exercise for the good of everybody else, as opposed to just for the benefit of the ego.
Yeah, for the benefit of the I.
Yeah.
Of the me, yeah.
I don't know what made me think of that, but...
Word leader, it's really interesting because... Everything, like even in the beginning sentence that I start every time with, "Ahavta le'racha kamocha." You know, the words, especially in Hebrew, but the words have meanings that we give them. Now, some words have meanings that is straight through; it tells you what it is. But when we look at word judge or leader, we attach to it our relationship. And this is what this time is really about. All this time between Rosh Hashanah and now, and actually it's something that we should look, I believe we should look at all the time. But what comes up now is really our relationships. Our relationships, and I'm not talking only about a relationship between one person to another, a romantic relationship or work relationship, but it is our relationship to that relationship, to that connection. Our relationship to that idea of something. So here is something. I put a quote up a couple of days ago, right? A quote that I was told from from the Dalai Lama, mm-hmm. right? And it says, and it says, "Give those who you love wings to fly, roots to come back to, and reasons to stay." Is that right?
That's right.
Right. Wings to fly. To fly, right? Now, the roots are important because if we don't have roots and we fly, it's like in the Kriyat Shema, in the Shema reading, where it says, "Don't tour after your heart." Mm-hmm. Right, because a heart, as a tourist, you walk into one place, you don't know where you'll come out. Right,
right.
So if there is no grounding, there is no holding, there are no roots, then it's disconnect. There is a disconnect, and so wings to fly, roots to come back to, and reasons to stay. And I see that the wings to fly and the roots to come back to are the reasons
to stay.
To stay, right?
I agree with that. And I also think that love in general, whether it's love of a child, I mean, I remember when my daughter was born and I was looking at her as an infant and I was thinking to myself, okay, so today is the beginning of my letting her go. Because
in the time when you gave her birth.
Right, yeah, because wow. For 9 months and 3 weeks, and who was counting? she was
not me.
Growing inside of me.
Yeah.
And that's the only time when we were truly connected, right?
That's true.
Literally
that's
connected.
That's true.
And that once the child is born, it's the parents, I think, it's the parents' responsibility to start giving them the tools to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And involved in that are obviously creating roots so that they always have a feeling of belonging somewhere. Because I think that's the other thing about roots. His roots is also about feeling like you belong somewhere so that you can fly.
And that's true. And this is really our in our DNA, in our creation. Our root, our desire, our innate desire, our primal desire is really to belong, to connect, to be loved, to be seen. This is really all it is about. Because look at when people are getting older and they are towards their end of this journey here, they don't look at the work, they don't look at the business, they don't look at the career, at all the songs they've written, at all everything. All that they want and is to feel the connection, to feel that connection which we've many times made neglected.
Yes.
Because we are in the midst of this monopoly game.
And then I think they start to, in fact, they become closer to the way they were when they were children.
That's true. They become babies, right?
Because children, one of the great things about childhood is the ability to live in, like, right now, what's happening right now, as opposed to what happened yesterday or what's about to happen tomorrow. Mm-hmm. They're capable of living in the right now. And it's my observation, for example, of my mother, who is suffering from pretty severe dementia.
Mm.
She lives just right now.
Mm.
And in a lot of ways, it's very different from the way she lived her life. But maybe that's part of the cycle of how we move from the beginning to the end, you know, is that we start moving back again into the place that we came from.
And
maybe.
Yeah, and as children we enter the kingdom, right? And the children portion of it is the wonder,
mm-hmm.
right? So people with dementia, I mean, my dad is going through similar things, although I don't think he's in the same stages, just different stages, but it's like getting excited or upset all over again.
Yes.
Every time. Because they don't remember. Let's say, right, ask him, well, who are you? And, you know.
Yeah. And that's
her daughter, and I'm his son. You know, so who are you? And it's hard for us to see that because of the relationship that we have with her, the perception that we have about this kind of relationship. And so so when you start discovering that your mom start going into this phase.
Yes.
How did you do the shift? Was it difficult to do the shift? I mean, I'm sure
it's interesting because it happened pretty slowly. I remember at the very beginning, my father too and I both sort of had this idea that she was going to get better somehow.
We always do.
And so for a while, I would say we were both kind of thinking, well, if we do this and if she does that and if we eat different food or we do these exercises. And so we both found ourselves kind of bombarding her with things to fix her, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, again, is like these are all common themes in our lives. It doesn't only happen when someone is not well, you mm-hmm. know, or is struggling with something. It's mm-hmm. it's like our instinct is always that there has to be an answer to fix it. And sometimes if you let the process unfold the way that it's unfolding in front of you without trying to interfere.
Yeah.
And that's where I kind of got to at a certain point. It was like I stopped correcting her when she said something that wasn't true.
Mm.
I stopped
like
saying,
if she said, I didn't see you for a long time and yeah, you just I saw just, her an hour ago.
And that was really more about me yeah. wanting to reassure her that I wasn't abandoning her or wanting her to see that I was being attentive. It wasn't about her. It was about mm-hmm. me. So I would start asking myself, am I wanting to jump in and correct her for my own sake, or am I helping her in some
mm-hmm,
way?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized at a certain point I wasn't helping her at all. I was only kind of agitating her, really, because I was reminding her of what
mm-hmm.
state she was in.
Mm-hmm. Reminding her?
Yeah, and I didn't...
Reminding her or you?
Yeah. No, I was reminding her as opposed to accepting that it doesn't matter.
But isn't it the same thing?
No.
Than trying to correct her?
No, I don't think so. Her? I think I was initially correcting her because I wanted her to see me a certain way.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized that it was about me. It wasn't about her.
That's right.
And it wasn't necessary for me to correct her anymore. It didn't matter. She needed to be accepted for where she was. And it wasn't going to get better.
No, I get that. But what I'm saying is that trying to remind her of the state that she is, if she doesn't have the awareness to begin with of who you are, that means that she's not aware of the state that she's in.
Right. So at first I thought if I kept reminding her, maybe it would change.
Oh, that's what you did in the beginning, trying to remind her where she is.
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Thinking... If okay. I keep reminding her she'll, of what is real and mm-hmm, not what mm-hmm. she's thinking, then it'll get better and she'll soon wake up and go, oh, I see. Okay, I get it.
But
then
isn't,
I realized
isn't
it was about me.
Yeah,
it wasn't about her.
Yeah.
And
what she's thinking is real.
To her.
Yeah.
So what do I have to correct it for? I don't. And a lot changed and shifted once I was able to accept that.
Uh-huh.
And then the work was helping my dad also try and transition into that place where he didn't feel like he needed to say, no, it's this way, not that way.
Mm-hmm.
Which is much harder for him because he lives with her every day. You know, it's easier for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it affected all my relationships mm-hmm. because it freed me in a certain way from having to be seen as right or correct.
The need to be seen. Your relationship to the scene.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's the need. So
it
once
changed everything.
So once you let go of that need, it's like the difference between a soldier and a warrior.
Hmm.
Right? It's like a soldier will just go. And a warrior is confident in who they are, where they are, what kind of a relationship it is or whatever, and you don't need to do anything, right? And this is also part of this whole work, of this whole evolution that we're going through, this spiritual evolution that we're going through, that we really, in order to show our gifts and to show all that we have, we really don't have to do anything except for being in our gifts.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I also think that in terms of the quote from the Dalai Lama, I feel like I was able to really understand what that meant in a visceral way. And before, I feel like I only understood it in an intellectual way. And there's something about the shifting relationships that are really primal, like between mother and child,
mm-hmm.
where even if you're not aware of what's going on, you're kind of like reordering the furniture in your brain completely
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
the mother figure in your life is no longer there.
Mm. Yes. That's
and
true.
So I think that's by design, that at a certain point in your life, and it's probably not supposed to happen when you're a child or even a young adult, so I'm not suggesting that this is ever a good thing.
Yeah, but who knows? I mean,
but I think if you're able... If God has given you the gift of the kind of normal evolution of how these things go, where mm-hmm. when you get to be a full adult, which at this point, sadly, I am.
Why sadly am I?
You know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean, but yeah, okay.
You know, like if I decided right now to go climb that tree, it would probably be unadvisable.
Yeah, okay.
But if you're given the gift of getting to that place where you're truly a mature adult, when your parents start to need you differently, right? And you hopefully are needing them differently, then you start to be able to fill in those places in your own personality and emotional makeup that you were leaning on them for so long, maybe not in the best way, right? Holding on to old ideas, old stories, old resentments, old angers. And if you're able to do the work to release that stuff, I think that the loves of your life can change enormously too. Your relationship to your partner, to your children, to your husbands, to your everything.
Absolutely. The word that comes to this is integration. It's integration. You know, we are in this how we're growing up and in this world and in this stories that we come through. It is many times cultivating isolation, separation, getting closer, but once it gets a little bit vulnerable, we pull back.
Yeah.
And it is not about, and if we're going through this work and through this evolution, the spiritual evolution, it is not about forgetting who you are and forgetting what you've done and judging yourself with the eyes of today about something that you've done 5 years ago or a year ago. Because at that time, we had a different set of eyes. At that time, we had different perceptions. At that time, we had different thoughts, different beliefs about how. And because we are not our thoughts, we're not that. We shift. We evolve. We're fickle by nature. So it is.
But it was very strengthening.
It is
the short answer. You know that I finally felt like I was able to see her now.
Yeah.
And it was a way of differentiating myself from the things that I thought I needed her to reassure me about as my mother, because she wasn't able to do that for me anymore. So it's been an amazing experience, and I certainly don't wish it on anyone because it's very difficult. But sometimes the most difficult experiences we have are the, you know, it's a cliche, but the if we're lucky enough to see them through the eyes of experiences enrich us in some way, even if they're difficult. This was probably one of the most enriching experiences I've ever had.
Well, yeah, and I'm sorry that you're going through this as far as the pain, but it is growing. It is a growing, and we grow only when we are uncomfortable, right? I don't believe that we grow when we're comfortable.
No, I think
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, because when we are comfortable, think about this way, we're uncomfortable, going up, right? It is only through, it's like the story of the, how do lobsters grow?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that story?
Yeah.
They go under a rock, they shed their own skin, because their shell is tightening on them. If they would live in the States, they would get Prozac and all this.
Absolutely,
kind of stuff. Yeah. But they shell it and they grow another. So it's only when we're uncomfortable, is that we grow. And integration is part of uncomfortability, because
or discomfort.
Uncomfortability. Is there a word like that?
No. It's cute,
Well, there is a word. Well, there is uncomfortability. Okay, well, you know, I like to invent
I knew what
words.
You meant.
You know what I meant, right?
I do.
Yeah. You know, so this really is, so Yom Kippur, the purification, our relationships. And I want to add one more thing about Julie. Her parents are Marilyn and Alan Bergman. I know she doesn't like to talk about, lead with that, so I kind of waited a little bit until we're half through so we can talk about that. But Marilyn and Alan, wonderful woman of you know, I've met them. Your mom is wonderful, from what I could tell at this stage. I mean, there's so much that we can.
Yeah. Their relationship is extraordinary, and
so tell me about. Well, I will tell you. I will tell about Alan and Marilyn.
Okay.
They've written hundreds of songs that are embedded in American culture and world culture, actually. You know, all the Yentl movie, all the songs, right?
Yeah.
All the songs. All they wrote all the songs, work with Barbara Streisand pretty closely, and other musicians, Quincy Jones, and they wrote many, many, The Way We Were,
mm-hmm.
right? And What Are You Doing The Rest? I think I got it.
You got it.
The Rest Of Your Life.
Yeah.
North and East and South.
North and South and East and West
mm-hmm. of Your Life. Right, North, South. So all these wonderful and these words, and many times your parents wrote lyrics to existing melody, mm-hmm. which is wonder in my opinion, it's wonder.
My dad always says that the notes, that there are words on the notes, and then it's the lyricist's job to find them.
Wait, say again?
That there are words on the notes.
On the notes, yeah. It's the lyricist's job to find them. That's beautiful. Yeah, that's. So all this time, energetically. Now let's speak energetically for those who are not connecting via Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur, it's foreign to you, or you don't practice it, which is all good. But it's really since a few weeks ago, and when we also had a harvest moon, where everything comes to the surface. So everything comes to the surface. Everything in the last few weeks comes to the surface in sense of relationships. Because if we look down to it, everything is about relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. It is either a relationship between me to you, me to them, us, and our relationships to that issue, to that matter, right? To that. So it's all, and everything comes up. It's time, and it's time to bring it up because it's purification. So we can release that which doesn't serve us anymore and be open to receive, because the gifts are here. You are here. There is a reason that all of you, whoever is here now, at this time of the program, or at this time on earth, or at this time here and today, because we've chosen, you've chosen to come here. You've chosen your soul, you call it higher self. That's a whole different thing. I see it in a different way, but your higher self, your spiritual connection, everything is to come here. We are here to elevate and to grow spiritually. So we've come here. Do you believe that you chose to come here?
Yes.
Do you believe that you chose to come here to these experiences, to experience that, all that you're going through?
Yes, I do believe that.
With all the pain and all the beauty and everything.
I do believe that, yes. Definitely.
So if we see that, so did that come into mind, into heart, when you had the shift with your mother? Understanding that? Because I believe that this will ease the suffering, not the pain.
I think I started realizing it several years ago.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't necessarily able to articulate it quite, but I think I started realizing it several years ago when I was starting to have experiences that made me think this is happening to me for a reason.
Hmm.
And sometimes they were great experiences. They weren't all difficult at all, you know. And certain places in the world that I've been able to go, and people I've been able to spend time with and meet, especially spiritual people.
Yeah.
That I'm here for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we all are, and thank you. And this is really to come to a place of this spiritual growth. It is a matter of, first of all, being thankful.
Mm-hmm.
I feel right. Is being thankful, because when we are thankful, we can see things. We are open. because we're thanking for things that we take for granted. Walking.
I have to say, I feel like in the last maybe 2 or 3 years, I've really made a conscious effort to take very, very little for granted. Hmm. To be as grateful for every single thing as I can be, including the ability to turn the faucet on and have water come out.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. It is, and it is, so it's the relationship not between us only, it's also the relationship between us and the place, right? And this is Yom Kippur, and so Yom Kippur is really also, it has two parts. The purification, and if you're in a religious, you say forgiveness, and it is a forgiveness, but it is forgiveness not because we've done something wrong, necessarily. It's not because, oh, you're a bad boy, and slap, right? It is causality and effect, right? When we are thankful and we recognize that which we have, we grow and we receive more. So it's how we act and what we receive, right? And so Yom Kippur divides into two, the forgiveness or the purification between me and you, and the purification between me and it, right? And Yom Kippur is like when we are looking at how we spend water, when we look at how we are with earth, are we vandalizing, are we trashing, are we all the plastic, and it's like all this kind of stuff. Earth, God, has this enormous capacity to forgive unconditionally, I feel, and I see that. But when it comes to the second part, is between the relationship between us and somebody else. And Yom Kippur is not purifying you if there is something that is lingering between people. I just heard a bell, right? There was a bell in the studio somewhere, right?
Yep.
And we get signs from the universe all the time. All the time, if we are aware of that and we are open to receive signs, because signs have, it's all meaningful. It depends what kind of meaning. But so, it's between us to somebody else, and I want to take this magnificent opportunity to express my. My appreciation, my thankfulness, my gratitude, and my sorry, my apologetic presence to anyone, anybody, that any of my words, any of my action caused pain and caused suffering. And I know that it's there, and I know that I've done that, and I know that I've been there, and there are people in my life or that are not in my life that there is no resolution, and it is a critical thing, especially if there is a spiritual growth involved. You know, so
and I also think that when people say you can never go back, and what's done is done, and all of that, I don't dispute that in the kind of literal sense, but I dispute that in terms of how we take those experiences and move forward with them, and how we live in the relationships that we're in now, how we express our gratitude and our discomfort and our challenges, that it becomes a way to purify the things that linger from the past that we feel uncomfortable about still. Of which everybody has. I don't know anybody who reaches adulthood who doesn't have those experiences that they sometimes say to themselves, oh, I wish I could do that over again. But I do think that one of the other things about this week, that it gives you the opportunity to see that it's not about doing over something from the past. It's about bringing that feeling into the present and the future.
What we've learned. And we are on this plane, but if we go into past lives, even, in the work that I do, there's channeling, there is sound, and when I work with somebody and they tell me, oh, I've just seen where I was, or I've been to this place, and many times it's very exciting to talk about what we've been in past lives, what we've experienced in past lives, what we were. We're trying to find those threads that are bringing all these things together. But it's really not about what we were, but what we brought from there.
Mm-hmm.
We are here after all again.
That's right.
Right? We are here after all. So there is something that we missed last time. And this is the word, when I say we missed, this is the word in Hebrew, chet. Chet, which means in English, in the Bible, you'll see it translates as sin.
Mm.
But chet is sin. But sin comes, I don't know about the English, but that's why I don't buy into English translations or any translations many times, because there's no really the essence. But it comes from missing the target. Chet comes from leachti, to miss the target, to miss the target of our own journey, to miss the target of our own purpose, to miss the target of our own direction, of our own way. And that is chet. We missed, or we went out on a limb, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it is to purify this way so we can come back and we can see all the gifts that we have.
Mm. That's great. That's beautiful.
And this is really what it is all about. This is it is purifying our way. This is all for us. Now, when I talked to, when we brought up this this quote, right? There were comments and stuff like this. Oh, this is not religious. This is not Jewish. What you're looking? Ta-da. I want to get into that, but really, I want to bring up the point that it is. What triggered that people? And this is where the judgment comes in. What triggers people to judge negatively? Because it is not only, you can look at the words and say, oh, this person said that, the Dalai Lama, right? But if you look at that, this is what Judaism says as well. This is what Judaism says as well. Everything says as well, Kabbalah says that. It's really an understanding of where we come from, an understanding of how to develop, and if you the people or the person who commented about that, the video that I did on Friday, if you're listening, I encourage to have a conversation, because it is fear that pushes you not to see what you're already maybe trying to do. It is to fly. It is to be free. It is to be free with your ideas, with your gifts, to come out to the world, to be looked and to be seen and to be loved and to have a home to return to, right?
And I think I think fear is an important word that you just raised in this, because I think that, first of all, the idea of freedom mm-hmm. is a very complicated idea.
Yeah.
Because it means so many different things to so many different people. So it's a very triggering word. I think in the context that His Holiness the Dalai Lama meant it in that incredible three lines is every relationship can be seen through the prism of those three lines.
Of course.
And
yes,
that,
great.
And that if you are able to meet every relationship you have uh-huh. with those three criteria isn't exactly the right word, but intentions, because that's really what they
mm-hmm,
are.
Mm-hmm,
They're, it's an intentional way of looking at the relationship between you and another person.
Mm.
And I think it goes to the core of how we relate in intimate situations, which is a very private thing and can be very fear-inducing
mm-hmm.
because most of us come from places where there's been a lot of damage done to the core of those three intentions.
That's right.
So the challenge is, as adults, you know, how do we recalibrate our lives to honor those three intentions the best that we can? And I think that as a grown-up, I've gotten to a place where I understand really the relationship between the freedom and the roots and the reason to stay connected.
Amen. Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, we can talk for hours and hours, and our time is
really
yeah
wow.
When we chase
time,
that was very fast.
We wrestled it to the ground,
and up to the sky. Thank you, Julie, for coming again and for being here.
Thank you. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. It's always fun. Thank you for being here. Please visit me on my web on bodysoulsound.com and on Facebook. If you're watching, then you are on it already, and which is Body Soul Sound. And sound, and well, get some, bring it in. The sound is a key, is one of the keys to open up and to see things in a different way. So I invite you to reach out and to discover.
It's a good New Year's present to yourself.
It's a great New Year's present. Thank you. Yeah,
that's what I think.
Oh,
everyone
wonderful.
Should have a session with Elon for the new year.
Amen. Thank you, and much love to you. You know, and I want to leave you with the last song. We won't hear through the whole song because we're really out. But of course, Matti Kaspi. Not everyone who writes songs is a poet. Maybe he's just a person who's seen something beautiful that made his heart jump out. Have a wonderful, wonderful week. Chatima tova, shana tova.
לא כל מי שכותב שירים הוא משורר, לפעמים מוסתם אדם שליבו שוטט דם. לא כל מי שכותב שירים הוא משורר, אולי עבר בשדה וראה פרח יפה. לא כל מי שכותב שירים הוא משורר, אם חלפה מולו אישה איך יחשה. לא כל מי שכותב שירים הוא משורר, מספיק שהוא אחר. לא כל מי שכותב שירים
listening to Abracadabra, create what you speak with Elon Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.